Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers. For a rich, delicious experience, whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
We are back. It is another edition of Inside Boxing Live presented by PPV.com. It is Dan Canobio. It is Chris Algieri. And we are back to talk boxing, hijinks, talk drama, business, some fights, a lot of things, some celebrations, Chris getting into the New York Hall of Fame, and some other things as well. Chris is on the road. Where are you, Chris?
I'm in San Bernardino, which I've heard of. Never been, first time. Took about an hour and a half to get here from LAX, but now we're here. Not a whole lot over here, apparently. I was talking to the waiter at lunch, and I'm like, hey, what's there to do around here? He's like, not a whole lot. Don't go out at night. I was like, okay.
that's oh my God.
I'm gonna heed that warning from a local. So gonna be staying.
You and Paulie should head out. You and Paulie should head out on the streets, do a vlog.
Maybe 15 years ago, Paulie and I would probably go try and run amok and probably get into fights and get arrested. The 40-plus-year-old Paulie and Chris, not doing that.
Is there a restaurant in the hotel?
I had lunch there. It was very good. So,
oh, that's good. So you're going to be having every meal there?
Correct.
Yeah. Got to get the lay of the land when you're on the road.
I did go for a walk this afternoon, though, because I don't like to really listen when people tell me to do this. I did this in Colombia and I got stabbed. So...
I didn't know that.
You don't know that story?
You got stabbed in Colombia.
I got more.
You have time for that or no?
I was in Colombia and it was Halloween. I was there for one of the WBA conventions and I was walking back to the hotel and I had a few ladies of the night come and talk to me and the lady that I was with. And we were like, no, we're good. And we walk past them, and it starts raining. So, boom. And literally, the hotel is literally in eye shot. But we go underneath the tree, so we're not getting poured on. Three guys walk out from behind the tree. It was a setup. The girls were the lure, and the guys are going to follow up. And I was like, here we go. And then we start getting into a little, conversation at first. They're asking for money, but I could just tell these they were kids. They were young. I'm like, these guys are not looking. They're not looking for just money. So I pushed my friend behind me. And as I did that, I turned my way just for a second. The kid goes to tackle me. Boom. We get into a little scuffle. And then I go to punch him. And as soon as I see a flash of like a silver and I jump away, but I still hit him. Bang, hit him in the cheek. But I get clipped in the rib.
He had a knife.
Well, I don't know what it was. It was some kind of blade, some kind of metal, some kind of jagged. I don't know if it was a box cutter.
He brought a knife to a fist fight.
Yeah, but he got knocked out, and I got a little scratch. So I cracked him. Then I hit the other kid, and then the third kid didn't move. I think he was high on drugs. He was just sitting there, just whatever.
He's just like, what the hell just happened?
As I was dealing with these other kids, and I'm like the third kid, I was like, I was gonna crack him, and I was just like, and he just didn't move. So I'm like, all right. And then I went to go back to grab the first kid, and he was already running off. And then I was just like, all right, let's go back to the hotel. And it was really dark, so like I'm literally going underneath my shirt trying to tell if I'm leaking, and I'm like, I can't tell. I get back, and finally, thank God, I was wearing a leather jacket. So it hit the leather, it hit the shirt, hit
the leather. Yeah, the leather might have saved you.
Yeah. So I had a little slice on my rib. And I remember the next day I'm talking to my brother. He's like, oh, how was Columbia? I was like, oh, it was good. I was like, I got mugged. And he goes, you got mugged. He's like, what'd they get? I'm like, a right hook to the face.
a little bit of flesh.
And then I send him a picture on my knuckle, which was like super swollen. And I sent him a picture on my rib. And he goes, yo, you didn't get mugged, bro. You got stabbed. And I was it wasn't. It was like a stabbing. But I thought he was overreacting. But yeah, I did get hit with a knife. We'll put it that way.
WBA convention. These street guys, Don't they realize they're hanging out around some of the most dangerous people in the world, aka fighters?
These kids didn't realize anything, but literally everyone at the convention told me, do not go out there. Do not go out there at night. Do not go out alone. But
so you did.
No, I did. So I did. And I paid.
Let's not let that happen.
Right. That's
in San Bernardino.
Me and Paul.
You know why we can't let that happen, Chris?
Because we have a lot of work to do.
Because we just signed a new deal with PPV.com. PPV.com and Inside Boxing Live renew, and we will be bringing you some great content for the next year. A lot of podcasts. We'll be sending us to big fights. So we love our partners at PPV.com. They're the best, the presenting sponsor of this program. As you know, best place to order pay-per-view events, best place to hang out with the live chat, best content in the game now as we head out to fight weeks and do what we got to do. So we are super excited to team up and renew with PPV.com and keep this party going.
Do I get a Zippo hoodie now? Because you're rocking this merch, and I'm pretty jealous right now.
It's probably waiting at your house because I got two boxes. I got bomber jacket. Hoodies, multiple hoodies, hats, ski hats, everything.
Wow, I was kidding about that. Now we do have stuff. I have one shirt. This is PPV.com on the sleeve. Now I got a whole set. All right, I'm good. All right,
they just re-upped their merch. We're going to be making some merch too.
Yes,
some IBL merch.
We've been talking about it for a while. We got some cool taglines that I think people are going to really dig.
Yep. So shout out to PPV.com and shout out to everyone that has used PPV.com over the last year to order fights and beyond, more than just you, because they've been around since 2022. They've been on board with us since 2023, going back to the John Boy days.
Yep.
So they're awesome. So I'm really excited about what we could do together in the next year. Let's start in the boxing world with some TKO news. Another week, another story.
Another boxing's, leak.
A leak, another boxing scene article about TKO. And in this article, there was a proposed fighter pay scale. And it was very interesting and kind of set off a Twitter storm. It set off a social media frenzy. What was revealed is a pay structure for fighters. Doesn't say which type of fighter, doesn't say if it's for prospect, doesn't say if it's for an established guy, but you can kind of figure it out once we lay out this pay scale. So it's $20,000 for a 10-round fight by an unranked fighter. It's $50,000 when ranked by the company from 5 to 10. $125,000 per fight when ranked by the company from 3 to 4. $375,000 when challenging for company, quote-unquote, championship. $750,000 when defending, quote-unquote, company championship. And this was all according to boxing authorities who have reviewed documents presented to fighters. And what they've done, Chris, is TKO has set up a managerial firm. TKO has set up a managerial firm. Hualapai Ventures.
Right.
Hualapai Ventures has initiated contact with these fighters. Fighters who join the firm will be paid $5,000 within 3 days of their signing. The fighters who commit to a 3-year term following their first bout must stay on board for 2 years following their signing. So that's a little, maybe I have to ask you about that. Is it two or three as described by the effective date in the contract? So a lot to unpack here. And you look at those numbers and those figures. Yeah, it's a lot of money to the boxing fan out there, but it's really boxers are usually getting paid. It's interesting. What's your take on that information that I just chucked at you?
So again, we got to go off of just the information that is currently in front of us. What you just said, what has been quote unquote, I mean, is it a leak? Are we officially saying it's a leak? Because this wasn't put out.
It's not a leak. Like I read the story like so many times. This is according to boxing authorities who reviewed documents presented to fighters. I don't know, Lance.
So it's not a leak.
Lance wrote this story.
So it's guys that have actually seen the contracts, and this is what they're relaying the information that they read from these contracts, and now it has been presented by Lance Plugmire, who's a very good writer who writes for boxing scene. He's been around this sport for a very long time. So preliminary thoughts when I first heard about this, looked at this, I'm like, this is just a super basic intro boxing contract like I saw when I was first starting out. Every promoter that I came to when I first came to the sport of boxing when I was young, dumb, and broke, these were what these contracts look like. There was these numbers that were looked very flashy to a broke guy who didn't know what he was looking at. Like, whoa, 375 to fight for a title, you know, to, you know, or you know, 125 or whatever to be, you know, one of the top 10, you know, they ranked fighter. You know, those are really flashy numbers when you're, you know, a young guy coming up. And I think the first thing you even said to me is like, well, that's actually pretty good for guys who really aren't that well known or trying to break through. And yeah, but the problem is that you go from obscurity to very, very popular, and your money earning potential goes through the roof. So I can only speak from my own experience in all of this, in terms of what happens through a young fighter's career, who's not a guy who comes out of the amateurs like highly regarded, ranked, you know, and gets signed to a big promotion. I'm very much a grassroots guy, which it seems like those are the types of fighters that are being targeted for this new league. The guys who do not have a huge profile, the guys who are not coming big time out of the Olympics, making like a contenders league where these guys are going to be able to fight regularly and build their profile with a humongous platform. You know, but I went from literally no one knowing who I was to a world champion in literally a year. You know, granted, it took a long time for me to get to it there, but nobody knew who I was. When I came out and I beat Emmanuel Taylor, who was ranked number 3 in the world, nobody knew who I was, and I was supposed to get smashed that fight. And then I step into the Ruslan Provodnikov fight, and like, everyone's like, who is this undefeated guy from Long Island? Then I win that fight. Guess what? The next very next fight, I'm making millions of dollars. I've now entered the 7-figure bracket of the world, of the boxing world, within literally 8 months. So I went from February of 2014 to November of 2014, and I went from making 15K to multiple millions. So,
well,
that's my experience as someone who did not have, you know, any kind of backing.
That's the thing about this story, and that's the thing about this pay scale, and that's the thing about this situation as a whole. It's every fighter has a different experience.
Yep.
Every fighter has a different way to how they reached the mountaintop. You reached the mountaintop. You were a world champion. Doesn't get any bigger than that. There's fighters on this that are out there that want to reach that, but everyone has a different path. Mm-hmm. And this pay scale could be for a one fighter. It could be for a certain bracket of fighters. Like, when I look at this pay scale, they're not signing David Benavidez to this contract. I'm using David Benavidez as an example. He's 28 years old. He's on the precipice of huge fights. And, you know,
also,
he could.
Dan, I don't see, you know, I know we're getting mixed signals about whether this is going to be a league or not. But it certainly seems like a league. And if it's going to be a league, it sounds like it's more of a contenders level league.
This is
sub championship level guys initially, even though we're talking about fighting for titles in there. Well, a title, this title.
TKO but, title now.
Right.
A fifth belt.
The David Benavidez, I still think these David Benavidez fights, these Canelo fights, you know, the Bivol versus Better BF fights, I still think they happen. They're just not in this. They're not in this same thing. I don't think they're.
Yeah,
in
I know
the same,
because we're not getting. It's not this. We're not getting, like, this is what's going on with this announcement. And Dana White, when he does interviews with Dan Rayfield, did those interviews. You know, it was kind of put together very quickly. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of information, and we're getting breadcrumbs every week. We're getting little details about it. And it's up to us to put it together as people that have been around the sport, you in rooms, you know, with these contracts and me studying the sport every single day. So it's like, okay, when you look at those numbers, that looks like a contender series. And then when you look at the numbers out there that, like, Canelo's getting from Turkey, or like the numbers that have been out there for years with boxing, it doesn't add up. So, yeah, this is probably going to be something for a up-and-coming boxer, a prospect, mm-hmm. a B-level guy, maybe 3 or 4 losses, who wants to get into this. But it's just a mixed messaging that's confusing people. And because you have Turkey saying, we want to crush everyone out there, we're going to take over. You have Dana White saying for years, I'm not joining boxing until I know that I could take over and I know that I can make a huge statement. And not only that, the reputations of these guys, the reputation of Dana White as being the best promoter, fight promoter, basically out there, and everything that he's done with UFC over the last 20 to 25 years. The reputation of Turkey when it comes to making big fights and everything that he brings and his money. So when you see this pay scale, you're going to get people dunking on it, and not in a good way. Like, my mentions right now, because I put out a tweet about this, that has almost a million views, the tweet, so a lot of people are seeing it, is that they think that this pay scale is going to be for some of the biggest names in the sport, when it's clearly not, because they're so used to like UFC fighters getting paid practically peanuts compared to what boxing guys get. So yes, there are some mixed messages coming from Dana and Turkey and all this, but they're not telling us enough. So we're getting these the leaks like this, or whatever you want to call it, on this pay scale. But going back to the story, Chris,
well, damn, we're trying to make a loaf of bread out of crumbs.
Yeah, and it's not is it a league? Is it not a league? This certainly sounds like some type of league structure. If you enter into this as an unranked fighter, and it's almost like a video game, like you're starting off a career mode, and they're going to guarantee you 3 to 4 fights as an unranked fighter, and you could make and you get $5,000 to sign, and you get $20,000 right out of the gate. To fight as an unranked fighter, 50K when you get ranked 5 to 10. I mean, that could sound appealing to someone you see at your local gym, or someone that isn't getting like the top ranks looking at them, or someone maybe that is getting the top ranks look at them, because it's almost like when you take a job in the real world and you know what your salary is going to top out at. Like, say you're a teacher, like you know that in like 10 years you're getting this salary, and you know every salary you're getting.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like some fighters might go for that, Chris, because it's a very, very tough game. You know this. Like, you just explained your situation, which is very unique. It could be very tough for a prospect. And not only that, too, I want to mention the amount of promotion that they're going to put behind you. Like, if it's with Netflix, if it's with UFC, whether it's with Dana White, like, that's something that has to be talked about here, too. Yeah, $750K for defending your championship is not a lot in the boxing world, but there are some perks. There are some things about this that could be appealing to a young fighter.
No question. That's why I mentioned the platform. You get this massive platform and this marketing machine behind you. And Dana White is, you know, Dana White's talked about as being the best promoter. I don't think he's the best promarketer. I think he's the best marketer that has been involved in fight sports.
He's very good at his job.
It's funny.
Whether you like him or not.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's funny because promoter is such a misnomer. Because when you think of something, someone who promotes is someone who what you would think would be the marketer, but boxing promoters don't really market the fighters. They just put on the shows. It's not really the right term in terms of, you know, from a glossary lookup, but marketer for sure. Dana White's a fantastic marketer. He's also a fantastic businessman in terms of the way that he's been able to dominate his niche sport, which has, you know, grown tremendously under what he's been able to do. And now he's moving into boxing. But I can only talk about myself. I can't, in my experience on the business side of the sport, you know, I end up signing with a very small promoter, and, you know, I was in a contract that was a nightmare to deal with. And I was in and out of legal troubles for my entire career. It cost me a ton of money battling it out in courts. It worked out for me ultimately, but I definitely left a lot of money on the table. And I had a certain platform. It's obviously not as big as like a TKO or, you know, the on DAZN or RIA, whatever you want to call it, you know. But I had a local, hometown place I could fight. You know, I had a venue that I could sell out over and over again. I sold out 11 times, and it made me be able to build in a grassroots way to get to a position where when I got a call, that I could jump right into it and be ready and have enough fanfare, because I sold a ton of tickets. I sold like $60,000 in tickets for my world title fight at the Barclays Center, which is the reason I was picked. I was local, I was undefeated, and I could sell tickets. Hey, guess what? It worked out. I was able to do that, and then I won the fight. So, you know, in terms of having a platform, that matters. In terms of, you know, the pay scale, that's where things get dicey, because now we have the question. We need to find out more information. Are those numbers minimums? Are they ceilings? Are they maximums? We don't know. So this is all speculation. So everything that we say here is this is our own subjective reading of what we're looking at, because there are no details. So anyone getting mad in the comments, anybody getting mad when they see tweets and little clips, you got to listen to the long form discussions that we have here, because this is just our idea of what's going on. And guess what? This changes every single day. Our next show, we're going to be talking about this again. We're going to be talking about this for the next couple months, and it's going to change all the time as more information gets out. So, and this is just our, again, guys, this is a podcast. People tune in to listen to what our ideas are about certain topics as they unfold. And this is an unfolding topic.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Like, you once again explain your unique rise, that not every fighter can have that. Not every fighter has a hometown venue. Every fighter has a platform. So there are going to be some fighters. And there are, Right. And there's some fighters that don't want to think about that. So they might just be really, you know, on
his gyms and his talent. I didn't want to think about selling tickets. I had to.
Right. So this could work out for, like, there's a ton of talent out there that's not signed. There's a ton of talent out there that's underdeveloped or not promoted properly. And this offers, like, a little bit of structure. Like, this offers some type of, it just offers some stability. It offers, like, a plan. But there's a lot to peel back once again, Chris. Now we look at the rankings, right? And the money is based off company rankings. But the company is the one setting the rankings. That is a blatant breach of the Muhammad Ali Act. That's the problem here. That's herein lies one of the issues. Number two is, so you jump into this promotion, and now you're in this promotion. I'm not going to call it a league. And you're in now this ranking. Is this, and you're fighting for what is essentially the TKO championship belt, and that which will get you $375K when challenging for that belt, or $750 when you're the champion and you're defending it. So is that a fifth belt now? Because from what I've seen and what we've heard is that they want to eliminate the belts. They want to get rid of the sanctioning bodies. So with this, it looks like we have ourselves like another NABO type of situation, or a little more with a little more eyes on it. But you know what I mean? Like, you're entering into a quote unquote league now with rankings, and you become the TKO champion. But what does that really get you? You're not the WBC champion. You're a prospect, like maybe two or three years into your time at TKO, and you now have another belt. But can you defend it against other champions?
So this is something that I was discussing actually with Paulie in terms of whether or not this is a league. And if you're willing to work with the other promoters or not, and if you're willing to work with those other governing bodies or not, then you really are a league. If you're not willing to work with other promoters and other.
Well, that's the whole point. They said they want to put them out of business.
Well, yeah. But haven't they come back on that though? And that's the thing, the mixed signaling, because, you know,
they haven't said anything.
A week or two ago, we heard, you know, basically that Turkey wanted to decimate everybody else and take over. But then he comes back and he says, well, I want to work with everybody. I want to work with, you know, the governing bodies, and I'm not getting rid of any of the governing bodies. And WBC came out and they were very nice about everything. So the mixed signaling is tough to decipher. But I'll say this. When it comes to contracts, boxing contracts, the devil is in the details. So whatever does get released, not that it doesn't matter, but you got to look past everything. Because I'll tell you this, I've been in these contracts. A 3-year contract's not a 3-year contract. That's another thing.
Thank you.
There's extensions. So
I don't. This says 3-year. Okay, just I want to cut you off. I want to get your thoughts, but yeah, I'm just going to preface it here. The fighters who join commit to a 3-year term following their first bout and must stay on board for 2 years. Following their signing. So does that mean, like, if you sign, you have to stay on for 2 years and then three at maximum?
That sounds like a minimum of 2 years, and then three is a renegotiating point. But
got it.
I'm gonna say this, because there are generally stipulations, and again, this is when the devil's in the details, like I said earlier. Oftentimes, boxing contracts will have, okay, it's a 3-year contract, but if we get you a title fight, it adds 2 years. Because the promoter doesn't want to build you to the point where you can get to a title, then mm-hmm. get the title, and then disappear to it and go sign with another promoter. Now, all the work that they put into you getting to become a champion, the other promoter gets to recoup now. So they'll add 2 years to that. So that 3-year contract becomes a 5-year contract. And then you got to depend, okay, what title are we talking about? Is that a USBA title? Because that could be considered a title. So a lot of times a promoter will, once you're getting close to that 3 years, you're getting close to that end time, that promoter throws you into a USBA fight. You don't have to win the fight. You just have to get the fight. So then that's a lot of times they angle you up the rankings for those reasons, because they can move you towards getting that fight, put you in a fight you're not ready, but it doesn't matter. Locks you in for another 2 years. You got the opportunity. You fumbled, but now you're with us for 2 years. So, and then there's injury time where you troll. It's called trolling. So now if you have to go to the hospital after a fight because you got to get stitched up, if you have if the boxing commission says that you're on suspension for 6 months, guess what? That 6 months goes on the end of that contract. So is that 3-year contract turns three years and 6 months. Listen, guys, this is a fight sport. You get cut, you get hurt, you hurt your hand, you go see a doctor afterwards, you're getting suspended. So you get knocked out. There's a suspension. Could be 6 months, could be a year. This becomes trolling time. So 3-year contracts are not 3-year contracts. There's always the devil is in the details.
Love that. I don't love some of those tactics that the promoters pull, but I love the insight.
You gotta be able to see it. And that's why we're getting so little information on this stuff. I'm telling this from my perspective, what I've dealt with and what I've seen from contract. Right.
The company shall guarantee Boxer the opportunity to participate in bouts every 5 months during the term commencing with the first bout, and shall make good faith efforts to offer Boxer the opportunity to participate in 4 bouts during the first year. So if you're an unranked fighter and you're fighting 4 times, that could be essentially $80,000, which, you know, that's a lot for a prospect. You got to factor in all the expenses and all that, which I'm sure you could fill us in on too. But I want to just bring up something here where I'm kind of playing this role in this discussion right now on how this could be, like, how can this be beneficial to boxing? Because that's ultimately what we want, right, Chris? We want this sport to thrive. Mm-hmm. We want young fighters to get opportunities. Like, yeah, we're all laughing. Some people, I'm not me, but there's some people laughing at this pay scale because it's like, oh, this is UFC. This is Dana White being a scumbag, blah, blah, blah. No, there could be some fighters that could benefit from this and go on to do great things. So I thought about it from this, like, say you're a prospect, put your mind into that. You're a prospect. You're not like an Olympian. Maybe you're like Olympian. Maybe you came up just short. You're known, you won Golden Gloves, blah, blah, blah. You're a local legend. You sign with TKO and you sign into this 3-year deal and you start off as an unranked fighter and you're fighting on pretty big platforms. Let's just say that TKO has secured some pretty good broadcast rights, like a linear channel and maybe some Netflix stuff. And you're fighting on in front of a lot of people, a lot of eyeballs. And you fight a few times that first year and you get, you know, maybe 70, 80K. You crack into the top 10, and your next year you're fighting for the 50K, and you are slowly working your way up, and you keep winning, and now you're in the top 4, and you're fighting for 125K, and all the while you're on great platforms, and you're being promoted well, and this is what we think is going to happen, or we hope happens with this promotion. And the next thing you know, within the 3 years of your contract with this company, according to the story that was written here, you're challenging for the belt for 375. You win it, and then you're getting 750K. That's not a terrible deal for in 3 years. I want to know what happens after the 3 years. I want to know what happens. Can you fight other champions? Are you looked at as a champion in the eyes of boxing fans at that point? Like, if you go through that whole gauntlet and you made some pretty decent money, and you've upped your profile, but you're not fighting like the top talent. Like, you're fighting the other whoever signs to this league. You're not signing the best, absolute best fighters. How is that person going to be looked at? How's that fighter going to be looked at? Are they looked at as worthy to fight the other 4 champions? Or is it just like some creation of TKO to kind of fool? I don't know who they're going to fool, because boxing fans are pretty smart. So that, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to think of what this will look like in 3 years with this plan.
Well, to start from the top, what you're saying, this could be really positive for a lot of people, for a lot of guys, and this could be really beneficial for the sport. But I need to see how this is going to work out. Are we signing opponents too? Because I'm going to say we, yeah. Because if you
want to sign 150 guys,
right? So
that came from Dana White's mouth to Dan Rayfield.
So then we're not necessarily. How is this any different than any other promotion then, in terms of
it's not
so we're not getting A-sides fighting A-sides anymore. We're gonna have opponents, we're gonna have guys coming up. And you said, like, because when you think about, when you tell me, like, oh, this guy's gonna fight 4 times a year, but it's like, yeah, but aren't they fighting all good guys? Isn't it all tough fights? Isn't it all, like,
they get knocked off?
Yeah, guys are gonna get knocked off. How many of these guys are actually gonna make it? They're gonna go all the way through undefeated and get to that point where they can win that said title. This isn't MMA. Losses matter a lot more in boxing, and your pay drops.
We're trying to get away from that.
It's going to take a long time. You're going to have to change the lexicon. You have to change the perception of the fans.
You have to rewire the brains of boxing fans.
Yeah, it's
for them to buy into this.
That's a dramatic shift in the fan base to understand that you can have guys who lost their last fight and then they come into a title situation, or that, you know, they jump right back and they fight every 4 months, even if they lose. Yeah, I don't know. It's a new world, man. And it's I'm curious to see how this all plays out.
Well, listen, none of our money is invested in it, so we could sit back and watch it all play out. And as someone that,
and talk
that
talks about for it, a living,
exactly, someone who talks about this for a living, it's super interesting, and it's very. I can't wait to see how this all plays out. But yeah, you have to rewire boxing fans' minds. That's my biggest thing. It's like, this goes back to when I said when this first came out. It's like, if you don't have the best talent, then it's not really a league. If you have one, you sign one big guy, but you have a bunch of B-sides that have maybe three or four losses, and it's not like, you're not going to fool the fans. Like when they tune in, yeah, I'll have a great presentation. It'll look awesome. Dana White's talking about the flashy presentation, and it's going to be the best broadcast you've ever seen, blah, blah, blah. That could only go so far. Remember PBC did that in 2015?
When they first came out, those shows were ridiculous. They were blowing through
the
money.
The budget was insanity.
Out of control, and the fights looked right. Awesome. But, you know,
again, Chris, right, it comes down to the fights. If the fights aren't good, the fans aren't going to tune in. You can put all the bells and whistles in it all you want. You could have the Hans Zimmer music. You can change up. You have these crazy entrances into the ring. You can have a big, you know, Bob Costas on the call and Al Michaels like they did for NBC. And it was fun for about a couple months. And then, you know, if the fights aren't sizzling, like, no one's really going to watch. So I'm curious to see how they're going to build up these guys and get people to care, get fight fans to care, and follow along on this journey and win a TKO championship, a TKO belt. I mean, once again, like, this could be just one fighter, but it's more and more, it's looking like this is going to be a very long play. Yeah. And what they want to do, and what they are, what they can do, because they have so much capital, TKO Group, I mean, it's a $20 billion company, is they could set up this, what they think is some type of grassroots structure.
Starting from the bottom up and taking over time.
Bro, that's a long play. That is an extremely long play. This isn't MMA. This isn't MMA. When Dana White took over UFC, the sport was in its infancy. They had the other promotions were just starting as well, and it was very easy to swallow them all up. It took some time, but he swallowed them all up. Top Rank has been around forever. Matchroom has been around forever. These boxing 100 plus years of quote unquote corruption and backdoor deals. And now we have four organizations now. Another, yep. You know, they keep getting added on. The IBO is trying to sniff around and get into this. So now potentially we could have a TKO. Like, I just want to see how it all plays out, but we're getting breadcrumbs. And from the looks of it, this is an extremely long play. But I think some fighters are going to benefit, and I'm happy about that.
Yeah, and fighters are going to line up to do it. To piggyback off of what you were saying, when Dana White came into the MMA scene and took over, he was basically battling this. I used this analogy the other day. He's basically battling a bunch of other street gangs, right? He went out and he's just beating these guys up. Yeah, I'll pay you off. Yeah, I'm actually going to hire you. You know, now it's like you got to fight the five families. Now they're mafias. It's not street gangs anymore. You have organized, systemic guys, systemized guys who have been around for decades. You're not just knocking off lowly street gangs anymore. You're knocking off crime families. No, that's, I don't want to say crime families. You're knocking off like mafia, you know, style, like
the five families.
It's different. It's a different kind of group. You know, you're going from street gangs to organized crime. Is, you know, just using as an analogy. Not saying that, you know, promoters organize crime. Although, you could argue it. It's going to be a lot more difficult to knock off those heads, and it's going to take a lot more money. And probably more time, and time is money. Yeah. So,
interesting times, man. It's all going to play out. Like, I'll tell you this: Nick Khan, Dana White, TKO Group—they're not dumb. They're not offering those figures that you guys. They're in the position they're in because they are very savvy, and those numbers that you saw, those figures, that money—that's not being offered to the top boxers. Come on, that's crazy. This is being offered to B-sides. It's being offered to prospects. I just want to see their total plan. And
guys, when it comes to numbers, the fans never see the numbers. Whatever numbers were in the paper when I fought, those aren't the numbers. It's never the numbers. So it's weird that the numbers actually came out on this, and like, we're, you know, but like, that's what gets fans to go, like, eyes to bug out of their head and talk about this, which is why we're talking about
Dude,
it. But
huge. Like I put out that tweet about, I just simply, you know, copy and pasted, I credited the boxing scene and I copy and pasted the figures. And I said, look at, here's some potential pay scale right now. It has 1 million views on Twitter. It's got 370 quote tweets, everyone giving their opinions. And the majority of the opinions were, this is going to go out of business in 2 years. Dana White back at it again. Peanuts. What are we thinking? LOL. This is a joke. Because like fight fans want to watch fights. There's very few. I would say there's like 1-2% that understand like the finer bit, like the business stuff. And you shouldn't care about that. If you do, it's fun. Yeah. But like, you should care about the fights and stuff. So when you see these prices and you see these numbers, it's leading me to believe that, yeah, it will be some type of feeder system. But if they go and they sign like the Canelo Crawford deal for that fight, and they're doing the 4 mega fights a year, and then they have the feeder system, it's starting to form into something here, but it's not like a complete takeover. So I think they're going to be operating from a position of extreme strength, and their strength is the money, capital, of purchasing fights, putting them on Netflix, and having the TKO sign visible there, and then operating on the extreme other end, which is $20,000 for a 10-round fight from an unranked fighter in their feeder system. Will those two like merge together? That's what we're looking for.
I don't know, Dan. I'm shrugging my shoulders. I'm watching from the outside, like you are, and we're just.
Would you put Michael Algieri, a local stud boxer in the amateur scene? Would you put him into this league?
Right out of the amateurs, no.
No, I would you not. Go the more traditional route?
At least initially, because I would have to see how things pan out. And you know, and that's to say, you know, I don't know. I think the way that I'm looking at it with him, I would go the traditional route, you know, kind of get him those wins down in the Caribbean and over in Mexico and Colombia, and then, you know, bring him to the States and get him some wins over there, and then, you know, see how he develops as a pro, cause, you know, and then go from there. And listen, if he's ends up being a multiple time national amateur champion, which is very possible, it's a different thing. Then you start kind of shopping him around to other promotions and see, hey, you guys want to sign him. But until I see him get his you know, kind of cut his teeth in the pro ranks, I'm not making any long-term deals.
See, there it is, bro. It's
especially with something brand new that I don't know how it's going to work out.
Exactly. There's going to be some skepticism from managers of fighters. There's going to be some skepticism from handlers of fighters.
And guess what? I work with fighters behind the scenes. You know, yeah. Not exactly as a manager, but an advisor, you know, so I keep my ear to the ground for all these things. And I want to, you know, take care of my guys just like anyone else wants to. So,
yeah, point being is point being is there going to be some people that are skeptical, even if it's Dana White and even if it's Turkey and even if it's TKO, because they just don't know. And that's what I mean. That's like the 100-year structure that's already been in place that has proven to work out. In certain ways, in certain instances, to go the route of I'm signing with Matchroom. They're going to put me on some of the bigger card, like Amari Jones. I'm going to sign with Matchroom. I'm an Olympian. They put me on this card. They put me on the Boots card. Eventually, I'll work my up. Or I say Keyshawn Davis. I've signed with Top Rank. And in 3 or 4 years,
Keyshawn initially was with Matchroom. He made his pro debut on first 2 or 3 fights. I think I called his first and his third.
And I don't know, like you said, like to your point about not knowing the money, and yeah, like if there's a little bit of a catch-22 when you look at this, and some risk involved is like, or you know that if you make it to the top of the scale, like you might get $750,000, maybe even more with some other deals, sponsors, blah blah blah, in the 3 or 4 years, or you can go into the hands of like a Eddie Hearn or a Top Rank. And you become a Keyshawn Davis in 3 or 4 years.
But also, So I was surprised that those numbers weren't, and I haven't heard this from anywhere, that those are minimums. Because the contracts that I saw coming up, I had minimums. Could be minimums. So then now you've got a range, and that range could be, I mean, very large. So, you know, that 750 starting as a minimum for a defense. Now we're talking different things.
If you're 21, so you sign when you're 21 and you're like 20 or 20.
Yeah, it's going to take 19. You a little bit to get there, though, I would think.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, again, it's like you said, every fighter's journey is different. And yeah. I mean, hopefully you can get out of this every deal within 3 years. I think boxing would be so much better. And we're seeing that a little bit.
A guy whose career was very meticulous in terms of its positioning, a guy like Devin Haney, does Devin Haney, the way that he was brought up, where he turned pro in Mexico and he got 15 fights in Mexico, right? That was financed by, you know, his father, his manager, the people around him. And then you get him signed, you know, to one of these other, does that guy get brought, that type of fighter? I'm not saying Devin himself. I'm saying that type of fighter, does he get brought into this league, or do they go the more traditional route? So these are the questions.
What I mean. That's up to TKO. It's Devin, up to them to lure
Devin,
them in.
By the time of 25 was made $10 million already. So
yeah, but he's such a unique case, bro. Like his dad was funding it like that.
But, there's a lot of fighters like that. They just don't make it
you
to the
so?
Level. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Look at Brian Norman Jr. He's not one of those guys.
I don't know his backstory.
Yeah, he was brought up with, if you look at his record, very built up record, that was brought to top rank, you know, ends up becoming world champion. Now he's on the precipice of making some big money paydays. But, you know, good amateur background, very good fighter, but definitely orchestrated the way that they were maneuvered through the beginning of their ranks. Just like I said, I would do with my nephew. There's a lot of ways to get to a title.
Yeah, but with Devin Haney in his first 10, 15 fights, we didn't see him. We didn't hear about him.
Right.
And here's the difference of today with streaming and everything being seen. Like, we're watching debuts. We're watching guys like we've never We're watching these fighters like we've never seen before. Early on in their career, ESPN Plus, watching Richard Torres' first 8 fights, knocking out legitimate cab drivers.
Yeah, but he's an Olympian. It's a different thing.
Right. So, like, what TKO can say is to a young fighter, is like, hey, man, like, we're going to put you on some huge platforms, and that's the whole point. We're going to get you into this WWE. You can show up on Monday Night Raw. You can show up to UFC events.
Are we fighting cab drivers on TV now? That's the problem.
Yes.
But that's terrible for the sport.
I don't know for sure. I'm just saying yes because that's what I think.
We don't see the Tijuana fights. Is my point. We don't see the Tijuana fights.
What I'm saying is like Devin Haney. We didn't know about him until he was 10, 15, and 0.
He was doing the Tijuana fights.
Yeah, but the allure of this league or whatever the TKO is that you would be able to see these guys right away. But then my other point is that we are already seeing these guys anyway. We're seeing them on ESPN Plus. We're seeing them on YouTube.
On Facebook Live. Yeah.
Before the bell. Seeing all that. I guess TKO is going to say what's different with us than Matchroom is we can bring you to Monday Night Raw. We can bring you to UFC. We can drop you into our marketing machine and hopefully churn out a huge star.
Yeah, but how many duds are there going to be that are going to get a huge platform that's going to water down the sport that way?
Of course it is, because now we're going to have a fifth belt.
I complain all the time that we're seeing these cab driver fights now, where you get a brilliant amateur who comes up and he's blasting out some cab driver in one round. Because back in the day, I remember when you watched a fight on TV, those fighters earned their spot to be on TV. You didn't see these cab drivers getting blown out on TV. On ESPN.
HBO, you saw 2 fights.
Yeah, and they were world-class guys. And
yeah,
even when
like
you
good
had
or bad.
Guys, I mean, it's good, ultimately, because you're seeing...
Wouldn't you like your fights to be televised? Or you're like, oh, shit, I'm glad that one wasn't on TV, even though you won.
Some of them were like that, yeah. But you know, I wanted them all to be on TV.
I think it's a positive.
I don't know. I think there should be a certain level of skill and professionalism that should be on TV.
I get it, and that's the problem today. Is that with the networks and the suppliers, like ESPN Plus wants content, so therefore you're watching ESPN Plus. You're watching the first fights of the night. I mean, some fans tune in, some fans don't. But yeah, I ultimately think it's a net positive to see Richard Torres. Like we now know who he is.
Yeah, but Richard Torres was. I mean, I guess his opponents were not. But yeah, I don't know, man. Look where he's at in his career. People are asking from where. When is he stepping up? Because he's still fighting guys that are, you know, not impressive at all.
Right. Like, put Richard Torres signs to this thing. You're telling me you're going to be able to find 20 to 25 heavyweights to join the heavyweight division of this league, and he's just going to blow through? Dana says he's hiring matchmakers and he's hiring boxing people. Man, they're gonna have their work cut out for them.
The more information we get, there's just more questions.
Oh, man. Let's move on to the fights this weekend. Sebastian Fundora is back in action for the first time in a year since beating Tim Zhu in a bloody, bloody battle. He's fighting Chordale Booker out of Connecticut. Great story. Local guy. Got to know him over the years. This is on regular Amazon.
Good dude.
And, oh, he's awesome. He has a stiff, stiff opposition here in Fundora. Fundora should win. He should look to Virgil Ortiz. He should look to maybe Zhu. He should look, not Zhu. Yeah. He should look to unifications because this isn't exactly the fight that we asked for as fans. It's been a year since we've seen Fundora, one of the most exciting wins of the year, one of the most exciting fighters. And then he comes back, and no offense to Booker, but you know, this isn't exactly the fight we were clamoring for.
No, but it's a bit of a get-back fight for, you know, a unified champion because Fundora has two belts. And, you know, he has been out for a while. He injured his nose in that Zhu fight, which apparently kept him out for a while. And the negotiating kept him out for a while. Dangling of Errol Spence matchup kept him out for a while. So now he comes back, and it almost seems like, you know, he was preparing for Errol Spence, and that fight didn't materialize. So they put in another southpaw. And now you got Cordell Booker, who steps in, who's obviously not the same level as an Errol Spence. But for Cordell Booker, this is his Rocky moment. This is where he needs to be the best version of himself that we've ever seen. You know, the only step up we've ever seen with Booker is when he fought Amma Williams, but it was a short notice fight and it was up at 160. Now we're at 154. This is his weight class. He's putting all into this. But like you said, really, really stiff competition because Fundora is an issue for everybody in that weight class. The guy is 6'6", southpaw with heavy hands who throws a ton of punches. He's a nightmare for everybody. Likes to fight on the inside, gets hit, comes right back. Volume puncher who's got heavy hands with the Mexican heart, lives the lifestyle, super disciplined, always in great shape, endless gas tank, you name it. He's a nightmare.
He's so good, and he's so exciting. Like, you don't know, sparked out.
Never in a bad fight.
He gets knocked out by Mendoza, but then he comes back and beats Zhu in that fight as a short notice guy, as a late replacement. So, yeah, I want to see Fundora, if he wins, I'm not saying it's a foregone conclusion, but he's a big favorite. I want to see Fundora look to Virgil Ortiz. I'm going to see him look to Murtaz Aliyev. I want to see him, get those shots and a unification bout. I mean, are they going to maybe look to Keith Thurman? Are they going to look to Jesus Ramos, who is on the undercard? I mean, at 154, he's fighting Guido Schramm. So, yeah, this is obviously a get-back fight for Fundora. I kind of wish he got back in there, but like I said, the Spence thing was, they really wanted to make that fight. And I feel like PBC got dragged along by Spence. And with Fundora sitting out for a year, obviously not great, but also not the worst thing, considering the type of fight he was in with Zhu. So let's not sit out even longer. Get back into the ring in 3-4 months.
Yeah, and I had the chance to speak to him, and I asked him about that nose. I'm like, what's up with that nose, man? How is it? He's like, no, it's fine. It's good. So, I mean, again, taking some time off, but a year is a long time, even for a nose. But again, I think it was more the business side the last 6 months rather than the injury. But he has had a tough schedule. You mentioned him getting sparked out by Mendoza. That Zhu fight was not easy by any means. Zhu was landing some big shots, especially early on. Grueling fight, bloody, both guys bleeding all over the place. So, yeah, the year is not the worst thing for a young guy like him. It sucks for us because we want to see him again because he's exciting. And also, he holds two of the belts in the deepest division in the weight class. But he's got a target on his back now. I mean, you got an opportunity to fight him, a guy that we've seen knocked out, and garner two belts in one fight. That's a big deal.
Yeah, it's on regular prime on Saturday night. Co-main event, Jesus Ramos versus Guido Schramm. Over in Australia, George Kamposos, the cat with nine lives, makes his matchroom debut against late replacement Jake Wiley. He's fighting at 140 pounds as well. Scott Nicholson versus Tierra Brown is the co-main event. But for Kamposos, I do not understand this guy's career. It needs to be studied. I think 1-4 in his last five fights, the blowout losses to Haney twice, stopped by Lomachenko, but somehow, Chris, he's rated third at 140 pounds by the IBF, and they're angling Kamposos to fight Richardson Hitchens in his next fight. Listen, I'm all for the blood and guts warriors and all for getting rid of the let's everyone has to be undefeated. But it's not like George Kambosos is in these super exciting fights. And no. From what I've seen as well, this he's not selling a lot of tickets for this fight because I think the fans are understanding too. Like when he gets stopped by 36-year-old Lomachenko, it's kind of like the end of the road, no? But he's a good dude and he's awesome on Twitter. But I just don't understand like these cases where every fighter is like treated differently.
Yeah, well, that ending really got me there. Half these fighters are treated differently.
Why?
But because that's
why is he treated differently? Because he's from Australia.
It's the issue of the sport, man. Why do some guys get the pathways they get, and other guys have the
But for years, I've heard it's like, oh, he's from Australia. Like, is Australia just some like diamond mine?
It's this massive market that the promoters have been pushing for to try and get a star out of.
They don't care out there anymore.
It just depends. I think it depends on who. I think they get behind their guys. But like you said, George, at this point, is a bit long in the tooth. He's been exposed. And you mentioned the fights that he's been in. It's not like they were close fights either. I mean, Haney, 24
did
rounds.
Did he win a round?
Did he win? You're counting minutes of the 24 rounds that they've spent together. With Lomachenko completely out of his depth. Most people thought he lost to Maxie Hughes. So
another one.
Yeah, I mean, and even the brilliant performance against Teofimo Lopez, man, that was a really close fight. That was a back-and-forth action, awesome fight. And, I mean, he really capitalized, obviously, off of the performance of his lifetime. But that was a super close fight, too, man. That was, the stellar standout. But since then, not a whole lot of positive to really talk about to garner these types of opportunities over and over and over again.
It's amazing that he's riding that Teofimo win. It was 3 years ago.
He's got the look, I get it, so much money. He's got the mouthpiece and he's got the geographical location in terms of where he's from. But he's got the passport, as they say, but I don't know, man. That Hitchens fight is going to happen as long as he gets past whoever this guy is that he's fighting.
Dude, I'm told the IBF is the real one. Like that we stand up for our principles. We strip fighters. We strip Canelo for goodness sake. If we don't mess around. And they rank George Kambosos third.
Never fought at 140.
Liam Parra was behind him. And Liam Parra was a former world champion at 140.
At 140, yes. Yes.
Explain that, what? IBF. Bring on the TKO league, okay? Bring it on.
we turned Dan around. We turned Dan around.
We don't have this in the TKO league, baby. Well, Sky Nicholson's fighting Tierra Brown. I'm actually looking forward to this fight because Tierra Brown, I've called a bunch of her fights. She fought a bunch on Bella's Broadway Boxing. Former cop that quit her job as a cop to be full time.
Wow. That's okay. I didn't know that.
And she is very tough. She's in the face of Nicholson. Mm-hmm. She's talking a lot of trash. Nicholson is calm, cool, collective, can't hit me, I can't be touched. So I'm actually kind of looking forward to that 10-round, 2-minute fight. That is the co-main over in Australia this weekend.
As tough as Tiara Brown has been, talking, she's actually one of the sweetest girls around. They both are. They're both super sweet. They're both super nice, sweet girls. They can fight. So it is an interesting fight. I see a lot of chatter amongst the boxing heads about this fight.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. I'm going to watch that one for sure. Speaking of women's boxing, Alicia Bumgarner signed with MVP. I think that's a
big move.
Home run of a signing by MVP. I'm not just saying that because I work with them. I just think that, she's an undisputed champion. She had the issues with the PEDs. She did ultimately get exonerated by the WBC. She's been out of the ring. She fought a fight this year, but it wasn't big. But now she's on a huge platform. I'm assuming she's going to fight on the Netflix card. On Serrano Taylor 3, there was no confirmation of that. But this is a no-brainer for MVP, who has now picked the lane MVP. Women's boxing is going to be a big part of the plans for MVP. They have Serrano signed to a lifetime deal. They got Shadeja Green. They have a lot of prospects signed, and now they have Bumgarner. So I think that's a good deal.
Yeah, no, makes a ton of sense. It was interesting when they actually posted, that this signing, they had Serrano and Bumgarner together. Are we looking at what's definitely going to happen next? Win, lose, or draw?
I mean, that was a fight for a while. Like when Bumgarner had all the freaking Momentum, man. 2022, yeah. When she knocked out Terry Harper and then she beat Mayer, and she's barely. She had huge star, like Twitter, Instagram. You know, she's very attractive. She's posting, like, she's doing what she should be doing. She's marketing herself beautifully, and she's huge. She's knocking people out too, like, which is the biggest chief. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean. So I'm like, all right, this is a star. This is like the next big star in women's boxing, potentially regular boxing, because at that point we weren't getting the big fights that we're getting today. So women's boxing was kind of carrying the torch. But if MVP can get back to that, and my point being, like, for a while, like, Serrano and Bumgarner was the fight. And I remember asking Serrano about it in an interview, and she's like, yeah, I'm keeping an eye on her. So who knows? Maybe they could put Bumgarner in there. Maybe Bumgarner could fight Scott Nicholson. Maybe Bumgarner can fight Mayer again. The point is,
like,
that
they're going to set up Serrano while they still can, because Serrano is – she's – I know that she's had a lifetime deal, but, you know, she's getting older. She's had some – she's got some wear and tear.
She might retire after this third fight.
I mean, she certainly could. So I don't know. It's funny that this is a lifetime deal. I mean, what is that?
Yeah, no, it's a lifetime deal in terms of she's going to, like, head up.
Like an ambassador.
Ambassador women's boxing. She's going to help MVP with signing more women.
So that's why she was in the photo. That makes sense. But also, Serrano, she's not a real 40 pounder. Katie and her have been fighting at 40. Yeah. She's not even a real 35 pounder. She's actually a 30 pounder. Yeah. So Baumgartner is a 30 pounder also. Serrano is her true weight class is 30. I mean, Serrano, I think she's fought as low as 22, no? At 118. World class level? 118. Yeah. So you know, she crazy. I remember her jumping up. She was going 22, 26, back to 22, then to 30, then to 40, then back, like, all over the map.
She doesn't get enough credit. I mean, she gets a lot of credit the last couple of years.
She got enough credit in her bank account now, dude. She's doing just fine.
She's awesome. I love hanging out with her on the road, being part of the MVP team with her. But yeah, this is good. What I think MVP is going to do is they're going to try to scoop up as much female women's talent, and like all the biggest women's fights are going to have to go through MVP.
You know, they have Netflix. Has a big stable of women, so they're going to.
They haven't been putting a lot of emphasis on it, bro.
Not lately, no. It seems like MVP has taken the momentum of that, but it doesn't matter. Matchroom still has a lot of those women. Can we see some cross promotion for guys?
They're going to have to. That's the point. It's like, listen, the third Serrano Taylor 3 is an MVP promoted fight. It's on Netflix, like, and that's very rare because Katie Taylor won the second fight, won the first fight. So, like, in a normal, traditional sense, like, Matchroom would have controlled the third fight. But MVP has these relationships with Netflix and has Jake Paul. And so, therefore, like, yeah, if you're signed to Matchroom, like Scott Nicholson, and you want to fight Alicia Bumgarner or someone that's with MVP, you're going to have to, you know, go over to the MVP side, or there's going to be a lot of cross-promotion. That's always been the case with women's boxing. There's obviously been a neglect with women's boxing in Saudi. Like, I think Nicholson was the only female to fight over there.
Rama Ali fought over there once. I think she was the very first, but I think Sky was the first title fight.
Yeah, so, I mean, MVP's pretty smart in terms of them saying, listen, we're going up against some giants here in Top Rank and PBC and some of the other ones. Our lane is going to be, you know, women's boxing, as well as putting on some other good fights too. So I thought it was a cool signing and good move by them.
Agreed.
All right, Chris, it's the end of the show. Before we say goodbye, on Sunday, you are getting inducted into the Ring 8 New York Boxing Hall of Fame.
Yes, sir.
I will be there in my best suit alongside Saddam Ali, Cindy Serrano.
Yeah, not a Serrano sister.
Mitch Blood Green.
I really hope he's there. That's going to be such a cool photo op.
Yes. But are you excited about this? This is awesome, man. This is a really cool honor. And are you going to give a speech?
Yeah, I am excited. My family is super excited. They've been over the moon about this whole situation. So we got a table of like 14 Algerians.
And I'm going to be in Algeria for a day. Yeah,
for a day. You're going to be with Team Algeria, Family Algeria that day.
Let's go.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. It's going to be nice.
I'm going to document the hell out of this.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be a good time. It's going to be fun.
So are you going to wing the speech? Write something on the flight from LA.
I'm gonna write something on the flight, and then I'll ad lib most of that. That's usually how I do my talks anyway.
Well, I got a shout
out. No.
Fuck.
Why? We're talking about my boxing career.
What about your new media career? I brought you onto this podcast and you exploded. Now you're on ESPN, you're in Pro Box, you're everywhere.
Yeah, it was you.
Think about it, all right?
I don't know how much I'm going to be talking about my current. I guess it depends on how they intro me. If they're former world champion and now current media dickhead.
Like the rest of them.
Just like the rest of them.
Or you say, hello, everyone. This speech is brought to you by PPV.com, the world leader in PPV events.
At the end of it, I'd be like, I had to say PPV.com 3 times in that 7-minute speech, or else I wasn't going to get paid this month.
Yeah, get a mid-roll in there. It's going to be awesome. Enjoy the fights. Pro Box, Saturday night. DraftKings as well. They're one of our sponsors as well. Enjoy the fights this weekend over Pro Box Saturday night. And then we got some decent fights throughout the day.
We got some decent fights over here at Pro Box over in San Bernardino. We got Lester Martinez, the Guatemalan future potential star. He's fighting Joe Sean James.
168,
yeah. Dude, he's got 18, 19, 20 wins, something like that. He's like right there. He's trained by BOMAC.
You fight for Pro Box, you might end up in a title fight.
It's been happening more and more. Dude, we got Ramon Cardenas fighting Inoue in Vegas. Like, it's ridiculous. Wow. Angel Leo is a world champion. Like, we're getting more and more of these guys are springboarding off this platform into big fights. So Lester's one of those guys who's like right there.
Check out the fights this weekend. We'll see you maybe Sunday or Monday, because depends on how drunk we get at the Ring 8. Enjoy the weekend, everybody. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of his DMs. Good night.